Yeah, I'm Jackson. I have zero experience with carpentry.
I studied at a school for historic preservation in Boston and learned about how things were built, you know, 250 years ago.
There's a long way to go. I'm nowhere near the top. Not that I thought I was, but there's so much more to do out there.
Welcome back to the Passion for Craft podcast. Today we are a gossip channel, getting all the insides, behind the scenes, and extras for Brent Hull on Lone Star Restoration. Brent, what do you think? Well, really, Richard, you had the questions.
You wanted to know. What do you want to know?
Well, I'm curious, like, being in social media, YouTube world, like, we're kind of in control of all of our own stuff. Like, you know, I don't really write scripts, but the video ideas come and then, you know, we execute on those, film them, edit them, upload them. We're kind of our own thing. So I'm wondering, I guess my question is, who initiates that relationship? Does History Channel reach out to you? Or are you trying to make a show? Like, how does that even come about?
The truth is, so that was in 2016, okay? It was just when we filmed.
And what was it? What happened?
Will you just be patient? My gosh. So
I think it's important for some people who are like, Lone Star Restoration, what's that? Like, you had a show on History Channel called Lone Star Restoration. We're going to give a little behind the scenes. That's all I wanted you to say.
Do I need to say it again?
Why don't you?
So probably in 2014, right? That was the rise of HGTV. That was the, you know, and I felt like if I had a show on one of those channels, you know, I would make it. And and thought that was the end all be all. So
he came home saying, like, I'm dreaming of becoming a star one day. If only I could see my name in the marquee. It was all sorts of stuff with him.
Not true. So I would get calls at that time probably twice a year from some kind of producer saying, hey, would you be interested in doing this show? I'd get an email from a producer, hey, we're doing this show, would you be interested?
Just because HGTV and all that was popular, they're looking for plots,
they're looking
and
for
stuff?
Shows and okay. ideas and stuff like that. And the way it works is a network channel like HGTV or
History Channel
or whatever will say, hey, we're looking for this kind of show, and they'll send it out to all the production companies, because History and HGTV and none of them do their own. They're all independent production companies that pitch shows to the network. And so really the
HGTV, History Channel, all those, they aren't the production companies. Like, I thought you just described it as they were the production company.
No, they're not. They aren't the production company.
Yeah, they aren't. They're just the broadcasters, right?
Correct.
Okay.
So, apparently in 2015, History Channel put out a directive that they wanted inspired by Chip and Joanna, and they wanted a History Channel version of Chip and Joanna.
An obvious choice.
And so I don't get it.
You said they want a History Channel version of Chip and Joanna. I said an obvious choice. You're one person.
What they liked about me,
you're not Chip or Joanna.
What they found about me, I found out later, was that the dog connection.
Yes.
So they wanted a man and dog story. And so
instead of man and his wife, they wanted a man and his dog.
So that was why Romeo had such a prominent feature in the thing. Actually, about three production companies ended up, or maybe even four, reached out to me about wanting to do a show on History after I'd already been talking to this one production company that we ended up going with. And so I got a number of calls. And so it started with a phone call. Hey, would you be interested? And I was like, or maybe it was an email. Yeah, I'd be interested. And it was like, well, tell us about yourself. And I did. And then, you know, 2 days later, a producer called and said, hey, I'd love to come by and meet you and talk to you. And so this lady came by, and we hit it off, and she liked me. And then they started bringing their people over, right? So she's a producer for this production company. She was out scouting me, goes back to her team, hey, I think I found one. And then they brought out a camera, and they did what's called a sizzle reel. And so a sizzle reel's, can't remember.
Like a minute long or something?
No, it was a little bit longer than that, 7-8 minutes.
Okay.
And
it was surprisingly long.
And so then they took that sizzle reel back to the History Channel and made the pitch. And, you know, what happened was, behind the scenes, there was this guy that was helping me that I really liked. His name escapes me right now, but he and I really hit it off. And he was basically a scout for the production company, but he didn't work for the production. They would just pay him if he found things. Mm-hmm. And he was a really funny guy from South Carolina. He used to be a cop. He had actually had a reality TV show, and he would find weird stuff like this chicken that could talk. And he'd call up the production guy. I got to find a talking chicken. I think we can make it a show. And so he was a real character, and so, but he and I hit it off, and so he would kind of pull me out. He would make me laugh, and so we would start talking. And so what ended up happening is they had me sit down in the chair, and they have a camera running, and are like, "Well, tell us why this show will be good." And I would talk about, "Well, we're going to talk about historic preservation." Well, tell us what, you know. And so they weren't getting the answer that they wanted. And that's what happens with these, you know, showrunners and the things. They'll ask you questions like five different ways until you say it in a way that they really
can,
you know,
use, is or money. They like,
and
it.
So they kept egging me on. Finally, I was like, they were like, "Well, what's wrong with HGTV? What's wrong with this?" And then, because they knew it was a hot button for me. And finally, it's like, "Look, you don't get it. HGTV is crap. It's the worst stuff out there. It's ruining America." And I kind of went off on a rant. They were like, We got it. So apparently, when they went to the History Channel,
you're passionate about this thing.
They went to the History Channel, and that was the opening clip. Everything you see on the History HGTV is crap. And like the History Channel guys, everybody started clapping in the room, and that's how we won the History Channel.
That's spot. Funny.
So it turns out if you just bash the competition, the whole History Channel will get behind you. They'll give you a TV show.
So when this lady's scouting you, like following you along preliminary, and you're going about your day, are you like purposely trying to do cool stuff? And
no. So she's telling me, she goes, I was like, "How much time is this going to take? You know, what's the commitment? What's this deal?"
Because believe it or not, whereas most people, that would have been my question too, right? Like,
yeah.
I think it probably was, but I was like, "Is this not like the coolest thing ever? Is this not so fun?" This, you know, Puddle Glum gets here and goes, "I mean, how long is this thing going to take? Like, what are we going to do? Like, how long is this going to mess up my schedule?
You have a full-time job.
Yeah.
And, you know, at that time, there was a lot of horror stories about reality TV. Okay. Mm-hmm. And it was like, you know, they're going to make me look stupid. They're going to, you know, all they care about is the drama. They don't, you know. And so there was a brand, concern for me that was just like, is this really? And I was afraid my customers were going to be pissed, because, like, you know, what are you doing going out there doing a TV show? You know, you still haven't finished my job. And so, you know, I was worried that it was going to, you know, screw things up. In hindsight, 90% of our customers loved it. They were excited about it. Mm-hmm. They were like, "This is great."
Did it gain you customers too?
No.
The wrong kind.
Yeah.
With the production company coming over here in the apartments that are nearby, there were people who would come over and be like, "I want to put a new door on my apartment." And they're like, wrong crowd.
So what happened was, is that to that point, is that they, oh my gosh, I'm having to relive this freaking thing.
We're putting salt in old wounds.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
It's so funny because it was really like, I got to be a PA on the show. So production assistant, I got to is it PA?
Yeah.
I was like bottom of the totem pole, but I was helping out, which was really fun because I got to see like the behind the scenes and like a movie, you know, like TV. Yeah. It was crazy. And I'd go talk to him and I'd be like, "This is awesome, right?" And he's like, "It's a lot of time." It's a lot of work because, well, I guess there's more behind the scenes stuff. We'll get there.
So I'm sitting there going, you know, part of me is like, is this payday, right? Is this
yeah.
I'm going to get a bunch of Jack, and this is
Duck Dynasty, you know, like,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you look at those top shows, and you're sitting there going,
Stars.
You know, is this going to be me? And then the other side of it is I've also heard the horror stories, and, you know, I don't want it to be that. And so they're, you know, they're, Jamie, who was helping me, she was just like, Brent, we're just going to follow you around. You don't have to do anything. We're just going to follow you around. And so, you know, what they didn't tell you is that, like, they would want to take 8 takes of the same thing over and over again.
Wow.
And you're finally getting worn down, and they're like, energy. And you're like, you know, I got your freaking energy right here, babe. And just, you know, so that's what I was concerned about at the beginning. They ended up, my deal went so fast. They've never seen it go so fast, because when they got the green light, let's just say they came and did that sizzle reel in June or July. I got the green light by October, and there was a contract signed by December, and they started filming in March.
Wow.
So they're just like, in hindsight, deals never go that fast.
Oh, I thought that was slow.
No, that's
really fast.
That's
really
like, it's crazy. Like years that people pitch and try to do stuff and things like that. This was speedy. And so, and then they came and filmed for 4 months or 3 months.
It was like half a summer. It was like end of May, end of the summer. Remember?
It was into June, May, March, April, May, June. So yeah. It must have been 4 months. Anyway, the
oh my gosh,
we signed the contract. I got $6,500 an episode. Okay. And, so what is that times 8, 40, almost $50,000, $60,000, something like that. It wasn't enough.
Mm-hmm.
They ended up doing is they wanted a show about a man and his dog, and they wanted it to be an aspirational show for the men who watch History Channel to have these projects that, you know, I'd love to restore a boat. I'd love to, you know, fix up this. I'd love to do this. And so they were all projects that we wouldn't normally do.
Mm-hmm.
And so we restored a pool table for Thistle Hill, right? We, you know, restored a railroad car that needed to be a caboose. We redid a caboose.
Which is nothing. You don't do that.
We don't do that.
You can, but
it's just there's no money in it. And it's just mm-hmm. like... and so that's what he was referencing. Can you install a door? And you know, the problem was, is that, so we signed the contract. They said we need a showrunner. Now, showrunner is like the director. It's like that person.
Well, but before you get into the showrunner, like just going back to the concept, I guess maybe you're about to get to that because he kind of,
yeah.
Yeah.
The showrunner, so they gave us 4 names and these are the guys we'd like to use. And we interviewed 2 of them, and we're like, and we really liked these 2 guys. And then we got a weird phone call from the production company. And it turns out the production company that we used, that we worked with, had never done a big show before. They'd always done editing behind the scenes for other HGTV shows, but they'd never been the production company. So they were excited and probably took the deal because they wanted it mm-hmm. more than they really thought through it. And so I get a call from Jamie, and she says, we're going with this guy, and he's going to be your showrunner. It's like, wait a minute, why was I interviewing these people? Why are they giving me this guy? Well, you know, and it turns out later, she goes, we don't know. And I was like, is this normal? Is this the way this thing works? Is this what I'm going to be expecting? She's like, no, this is going to be fine. It's going to work out. Of course, that's their deal. You're going to be a star. This is going to be fine. You're going to love it. You know, all this, you know, they just...
They butter you up.
Mm-hmm. And so we ended up going with this guy. And it turns out that what happened was this head guy at History Channel got an email from this knucklehead guy and thought it was an omen that this guy was going to be perfect for our show. I didn't talk to him. That's I didn't crazy. Interview him. I didn't do anything. And this guy
because
shows up.
Because of the timing, because of like whatever, it was like because they were about to sign with this other guy who he had interviewed and they liked. And then they get this email in the 11th hour and the guy goes, well,
Well, that's what we understand.
We don't know that guy really.
Who did that ended up getting fired because of it, because they saw my energy on the show with the first people and then the last showrunner, and looked at what was going on with the first showrunner, and they're like, this guy screwed it up. This guy screwed up the whole energy.
It was like same production company, same everything. The only thing that changed was
the showrunner. Then is really important.
They said the director, and they said that he, you know, he sucked the energy out of me. He was a bad guy.
Yeah,
and just
not just you.
Yeah, well, that's true. So anyway, they show up with their. So that was the bad part. Is this guy that they hired was a bad choice. And so he comes and they set up office right over here. They leased a space and they start setting it up, right? And so I list out all the jobs that we're doing. We had, you know, 30 different projects going on, okay? And they list them out. And so they start building the show, okay? Mm-hmm. They start building the episodes. We're gonna do this over here. We're gonna do this here. They probably brought in two cameramen, a sound man, two production assistants. Jackson was working for a little while doing that, and maybe three.
Two or three PAs, but yeah.
And so they set up.
It was like a team of like 6 to 10. It was not a big team, but it was awesome.
Yeah, I mean, but you consider, you know, that what I do with Kristen and Austin, and sometimes it's one camera and, you know, a microphone, mm-hmm. what you do, right?
Right.
It was a bigger crew.
Yeah.
And so, they would go out during the day and do B-roll. They were all over the city, and they were doing all this stuff. So,
History Channel's paying them.
Okay. I think it was like, I don't know, maybe $100,000 an episode. Okay, mm-hmm. And so that was a ton of money to this new production company. There was like free money. That was part of the problem, is their inexperience. And then we started filming in March. And just all hell broke loose. It was just like, you know.
More context to the situation. It was like the idea behind the show was originally man and his dog doing, and it was pitched to him as just do it what you normally do. We just want to follow you around at a bunch of your jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the showrunner came in and said, yeah, I like these ideas, but what if we did like this? What if we just did this? What if we did this?
He came over one day and goes, what do you think about building a dog house? I was like, what are you talking about? And so he was like, yeah, we're going to build a dog house.
We build the dog house. The dog is scared to go inside. I mean, it was a nightmare.
You built it?
Yeah. And it was
never used.
No,
right?
No.
Yeah.
And so it was. So basically,
I gotta get a hold of that footage.
So then, what happened was we had a house that we were looking at over in Mistletoe, and it was for sale. Okay, and so the body of the whole show was about restoring this house. Okay.
Oh, I remember that house.
Okay. Yeah. And so, you know, they handled we faked the negotiation of when we bought the mm-hmm. house. We, you know, do the demo. We are doing the research, trying to figure out. So that was good, right? Holding it around this one house. Mm-hmm. The problem was if that was over 8 episodes, they're having to drop in all these other filler things.
Because basically they wanted like an A, B, and C plot for every episode.
Yeah, exactly.
And so we had the A plot. The B plot was your house?
Well, no, that was just, there was 8 B plots and then 8 C plots.
I guess
the
dog house was
The C plot was
you and Romeo.
Or me and you when we went down to that car thing. And so mm-hmm. anyway.
So the guy, I mean, he just, like, my birthday happened at one point, and he was like, what if we just got like you and like 6 of your friends to come in and like drive one of those beer cart things? And it was like, what does that have to do with restoration? You know what I mean? He was just like thinking of fun ideas, I guess.
You know,
he didn't catch the vision for what was going on.
I remember I asked him, I wanted him to read my book, Thomas House in an Instant Age, before he came on, and he didn't. And so mm-hmm. it's just like, I don't really have time for that. Yeah. And he had he had done a show about a gunsmith. He goes, I go, do you even really understand that about making and you know what we're doing? He goes, yeah, no, I did a show on about a gunsmith, and he was making stocks for the back of a gun. And I look at it, and this guy literally has like a router and a, you know, in a closet kind of shop. And it's just like, you're comparing what this guy's doing to what we're doing? Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
He's like, no, I really understand the maker thing, and I understand.
He's missed the point a lot.
He's just a bad dude.
Do you think had you gone with your original choice that you would have been picked up
seasons? No. So what happened was the when it aired, okay, it aired right before Donald Trump won the presidency. And so there was a lot of, you know, that was 2016. I think it aired on October 31st or October 30th. You know, he wins the thing November 2nd or whatever it was. And the noise around that thing just was hard, okay? The other piece is that the History Channel gave it about 4 episodes. And I remember the guy called me and he said, hey, we're moving you to another night. And I was like, that can't be good. He goes, no, it's good. We're not giving up. We really just think we're going to try a different night. The other thing is it didn't come on in Central Time until 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock.
It was crazy. So it after Pawn Stars.
And so it was...
at first. And then they moved it to during Monday Night Football.
Yeah, no, it was just
the wrong call.
They kind of gave up on it after it didn't work after the first or second episode.
I kind of agree with their decision after what was made. Like, I think the show is really fun, but if they had taken the original idea of what was pitched of Man and His Dog Restore Homes and they had taken it more of like a homes channel, they would have had a legitimate competitor to HGTV in a lot of ways.
Well,
where it's like, because everyone has a home. Not everyone has a caboose.
Well,
everyone has a home. Not everyone has a boathouse, you know?
Well, one thing that happened, too, is so they is the History Channel, right? And so when I heard that I was on the History Channel, I was like, this is perfect. I'm a history nut. You know, I was a history major in college. I just love history. And then I started watching the History Channel. And they have this thing called Aliens and the Outlaws or Aliens and the shows that they have in their thing are just like, what is this channel even? It's just, this is terrible. And you know October Island or whatever the freaking show is called, it's just like it was kind of the point where I go, I'm not even sure I want to be on this channel. I'm not sure that this is going to fit for me. And the other thing that we found out later is the History Channel, you know, we went and talked to the executive after it didn't get picked up. You know, it was over, and we had we were in New York for something, and I said, hey, do you want to go to lunch? He's like, yeah. And so we go to lunch, and he goes...
Who's we?
Me and Chrissy and the executive. And I was like, so just tell us kind of what happened. He goes, you know, I know the executive got fired, but, you know, what happened on y'all's thing? He goes, I think we were just a little bit too smart for our audience.
I could see that.
I was like, really? He goes, yeah. He goes, look. He goes, the problem is that History Channel is trying to find their way. And I was like, what do you mean find their way? He goes, well, ever since, you know, in the 80s when cable TV was the big thing, he goes, we got a dollar for every subscriber that things, and we were flush with cash. We had great ideas and everything else. Since then, people are now cutting the cord. There's so much competition out there. He goes, really, we really don't know, you know. He didn't say, I don't think he said these words, but he basically said, we don't really know, you know, exactly where we're going.
Mm-hmm.
And so, or exactly how we fit in this new landscape. Maybe he said it that way. And so, I don't think they really, it was a chance for them.
Right.
If it did well, they were going to run with it. If it didn't, if it went okay, they'd be like, yeah, I guess it didn't work.
Well, and they're in an industry where your job is to predict what people want, and that's nearly impossible, you know? So they're like trying to pick up shows in their defense, you know?
So I think if it had gotten on, you know, the other thing that happened with the production companies, they got in big trouble with HGTV because they had done a bunch of back office work for HGTV doing editing. They got in trouble with HGTV because HGTV was like, look, we've been working together for 5 years. You didn't bring us this show. Why wouldn't you bring us this show? And so they were in big trouble. And so then a bunch of people, like Brett Waterman, you know, seen it? He came out after that because he started doing their own History Channel show. And I think he does a good job. I think he's actually a real guy who knows what he's doing. Right? Yeah. There's a lot of people that don't. And, that became what my show could have been is Brett Waterman's deal. And so, good for him. And so it's
what do you mean? I missed that part about they were holding on to the show for 5 years and they got in trouble.
They were working with HGTV very closely.
The production company
did so much work for HGTV on the back end that
because one of the things that production company did a lot of work in was trailers. So they were really good at making trailers and like shorts and clips and stuff. And they
did editing of shows.
And they did that for HGTV shows.
Okay. One of the other interesting things was that they brought in, when we were finishing up projects, they brought in a zhuzher. She was basically...
She was crazy good.
Yeah, she was good. She basically understood the TV world and what looked good on camera and stuff like that. She was the interior designer, but understood TV.
She was the girl, we've referenced her before, who... She would, the house would be half finished or whatever, and then she would go, we'll make it look good.
And so she, one thing was fascinating talking to her is that she's worked in that world for 10 years. And she, I was asking her, I go, I was comparing what I do compared to, other people. And she would say, she'd worked on Chip and Joan Anderson. She goes, Chip doesn't know how to be a carpenter. He's not a carpenter at all. Mm-hmm. He's kind of he's not that person. And he doesn't necessarily play a carpenter on the show, but she was, my question was, how many of these TV stars really know what they're doing? And she's like, 5%, 10% at the most. She goes, we were setting up one of the houses that we'd done. And I was like the many of the stars come in and help me. She goes, no, none of them do. I was like, what do you mean? She goes, no, I set up the thing and then we get approval from them, but they're not doing any of, they're not, doing this show. Remember that show, Extreme Home Makeover?
Yeah.
That was going at the time. They, shows all those stars out shopping. That's not what happens on majority of these shows. And so, in any case, we hit a time and period where, the infiltration of those shows came and went so fast. And so I just part of that,
part of that wave.
That came and went and just went away. Now, at the same time, what was interesting was Matt was doing YouTube and his YouTube thing was growing really fast. I remember I went and saw him when he had 25,000, then 125,000, then, 200,000. Not even
just Matt, because you were probably starting YouTube at the same time, too.
Well, he was 2009.
You were well in.
Around 2016 time is when I started seeing those numbers skyrocket.
Wow. Oh, yeah. Interesting.
And it's crazy because, I may have even mentioned this before, but on YouTube, they used to have, like if you subscribe to Matt's channel and you clicked subscribe, they would have this thing pop up, like, you may also be interested in Finnish Carpentry TV, RR Buildings, like these other kind of construction, home-centered YouTube channels. So I think that was a huge part of it.
That's fascinating.
It was really interesting.
So I'm talking to Matt, and I'm, then fast forward, he comes and talks to me a few years later and says, hey, I'm starting this build show thing. Wanted to see if you want to be a contributor. One of the things the HGTV guy told me was, I go, what would you recommend to me? I said, what should a guy like I do? And he goes, own your own content. He goes, go talk to Facebook and Amazon. They're the next wave of TV. It's like, I didn't do that. But he goes, whatever you do, own your own content. So when Matt came along and said, hey, I want to do this, build show, I was like, I need to own my own content. I need to have, he goes, yeah, 100%. You own everything. And he and I had this conversation that I was frustrated because the show only showed about 10% of the
actual process
and actual the cool stuff that I that I really liked, and it was such a diet. I was like, they're showing 10% of the good stuff, right? And so And I didn't even get to see the show until it aired.
Yeah. That's weird.
It was weird. Like that. And so I was just saying to Matt, I was like, look, I go, what's it like in your world? He goes, it's awesome. He goes, I get to determine everything. I get to, you know, I control everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sitting there thinking about my History Channel experience and how frustrating it was and how I didn't have control and how I went back to the editing office and then who knows what they were gonna include or not include.
Mm-hmm.
And none of those guys that were editing or doing this stuff knew about preservation, knew what the cool mm-hmm. stuff was. So then you're like, you know, the great thing about YouTube and about what we're doing now is that I get to tell the story the way the story yeah. needs to be told. And so,
Just another piece there. I got told by a lot of like the background, like PA people, there's like two schools of thought when it comes to how you do reality TV. School of thought number one, which I think would have melded better with your mentality, is what shot do we want to get? Let's go in, let's get that shot, and then let's be done. School of thought number two, which is what the showrunner did, was we're just going to leave the cameras on. We're just going to get everything. And we were going to have film rolling all the time. And the crew is like, yeah, that's fine. Like, we see both schools of thought every time, but there is a better way of doing it. Mm-hmm. And if you're like planned and you have an idea of like more what you want, you can just get in, get out. And they're not uploading memory sticks of like, you know, gigabytes and gigabytes and gigabytes terabytes. Of data. Yeah, exactly. They're just doing very little because they were uploading it all to Nashville to the production company. So it wasn't like it was just, you know, in a server rack here. It was like it was getting sent. Anyway, but all that to say, like, I think part of the problem was they were asking so much of your time. But then also, like we heard later, like you were doing essentially the job of a producer or a showrunner, and the producers were doing the job of the showrunner.
And I would get there and I'd say, this is what we need to capture. This is what we need to do. This is the shot. This is the important shot.
But then if you think about that, if the philosophy that the guy's using is let's just keep the cameras rolling, and then it's going back to another production company in Nashville, and he's the guy who's saying this is the shot we need to get, who's being told that whenever they get the stuff, you know?
Mm-hmm.
No one was.
So the other thing that was really hard about it, it was that when those guys were there and when we started filming, I would Chrissy would say that I'd come home and I'd just kind of be, you know, just wiped. And I was working 7 days a week. We were filming all day on Saturday. We were, you know, Sunday there. I was trying to play catch up at work, right? Trying to catch up with all the stuff that I was doing.
Like, do your real job.
And they were 80, 90 hour weeks. And it was just like, I was just exhausted. I was just exhausted.
Was all $50,000.
Yeah.
You didn't get any more compensation after that?
No, sir.
Well,
there were some minor brand deals throughout the mix.
Which I never saw.
You never saw?
No, I never got any money for those.
I thought you got the M&M deal.
No.
Mars.
So the one time they asked us to eat M&M's on camera. There was
I was the holder.
And then there was another time they were saying, do you want a Ford truck? They would come in and say, do you want a Ford truck? It's like, yeah, that'd be great. And they're like, we're going to get you a Ford truck. Never got me a Ford truck. You know, just like, it was just crap like that.
Yeah, that's rough to get $50,000 and they're telling you to do like 8 takes of something. It's like not even worth it, you know?
And then when the new showrunner came in, she was so professional and so organized. And I would show up, but it was only the last, you know.
It was pickups. It was pickups. 2 weeks.
Yeah. Or
pickups. What does that mean?
Yeah, 3 or 4 weeks.
So they basically have gone to Nashville. They've edited. They've finished the editing process and they go, we're still missing a shot of this.
Okay.
We need you to go through this house and do this.
And she was good?
She was...
Oh my gosh.
I wasn't there for a lot of
her.
Was she the Australian girl?
Sorry. Uh-huh. She would come in and just go, okay, this is the shot we need.
Okay, this is the shot we need.
And then we would do it.
I knew it was coming.
We'd do it and she'd go, okay, great. He goes, you're free. We'll see you back at 3:00.
See you back at 3:00.
And I would go, wait, that's it? You're like, this is so night and day compared to the way it used to be that it was just like you got a glimpse into how it could have been. And you're just like, oh my gosh.
So if you could have, say, if you could do that again with her now, would you do all that again?
That's the question. That's the $100,000 question.
That's a great question, Richard.
I think that I would consider it. Okay, it would have to be the right situation. It'd have to be the right people. It'd have to be the right team.
Well,
have
set
to
be the right, set it up the for right us.
Story.
Would you hire Valen again, like that crew?
Oh, yeah.
No, Valen was incredible.
Valen was great. She was a production producer.
She was doing a lot of the job.
I liked a lot of those people.
I liked Gary was awesome.
Gary was awesome. He was a cameraman.
Well, Gary.
Loy was great.
Oh, he was great, too. He brought me along.
Lone Star, the sound guy, was awesome.
Oh, yeah, awesome.
So the people were really good. It was just the process. And
it was fun because you got to meet these people. You were like day in, day out with these guys.
I'm still in touch with Gary. Gary's the the camera guy. He's down in Florida now.
He does ESPN film or NFL filming.
Yeah, he does ABC Sports and NFL.
Well, wait, just to further Richard's question for you, like just set us up, like give us the ideal situation.
Well, I mean, so I think the reality is different today in that, you know, I've got...
Just let's go back to 2016 first. Or 2014 or 15, whatever.
Would I do it again in 2016?
With the right, like, what would it take for you to do it again then, knowing what you know now?
Are you saying if I lived in 2016, what would I do?
Like, take the knowledge that you know now.
Well, like,
would you do it again then?
I'm glad I did it.
Okay.
Okay, I'm glad I did it. I don't think I would have gotten on the Build Show if it wasn't for that.
Yeah.
You know, and so I think that it's...
cool portfolio.
Yeah, so, yeah, right? And so I'm glad I did it. Cool. I thought it would be better money. I thought it would, you know, and they told me, you know, when we're finally getting down to negotiations, they go, you know, you really won't start making money until year three. And I was like, why is that? And they go, well, you know, you're going to do year one and they've invested this money. It'll show in the next year and when they'll figure out year two. You'll film year two and it's not until you get 2 years of airtime that they will really look back and go, okay, we've got a hit or we've got something we want to do, and they come back with real money. So,
that makes sense.
So they told me that, you know, going into it. And so I didn't necessarily think I was going to get rich, but I thought it would help the business a lot.
Yeah.
And I was, the pleasant surprise was that my clients were really happy about it. They had a lot of fun doing it. One client actually got on one of the episodes when we restored a safe. And so it was fun. But the, and I would do it, no, I would do it again because it was good. The question I thought you were asking is, would you do it again
today
what if they asking. Came up?
Yeah, yeah. I just want to know the first part first, because if it was just like, no, we're out the window then, I'd be like, okay.
Yeah, I'm glad I did it. And it would, if we could put the right team together, I mean, one, the networks have to know that there is a YouTube and Instagram presence that's going to be competing with them. Okay, if they have the expectation that like one of the reasons Chip and Joanna, their show, what was their show called?
Fixer Upper.
Nice. They didn't have, you know, they built a business on Magnolia. They didn't build a business on the brand Fixer Upper. And so Fixer Upper was a name owned by you know HGTV, and Magnolia was their business. And so I think the companies recognize that we're going to try to monetize what we're doing here. But if they would let me continue to do my YouTube videos and yet also go do a show for them, I think I would consider that, right? Because at the time they wanted exclusives. You can't go do that. You can't go do that. You can't.
So you couldn't have done YouTube videos.
Yeah. Exactly. I couldn't have done YouTube videos. So that would be a deal killer today.
Yeah. Which just from speaking from the streaming space, which is the only space I know of, that even the streamers, which have been typically the most exclusive, like if you're streaming on Twitch, you can't stream on YouTube. Streaming on YouTube, you can't stream on Facebook, whatever. They are now. Everyone allows it. Everyone allows cross streaming.
So that world may have changed, right? And so, but you know, I guess what I'd want to do is I'd want to make sure we're going to do a show that's going to help people, right? Do a show that's going to really raise the bar. And so that candy coated version of the show that got finished, I wouldn't be happy with that.
Mm-hmm.
But if we could do something that really has, really helps people out, then like I've thought those Wednesday videos, the consulting things where you go fix a house could help people, because you could then talk about why that house works now, why it didn't work before. But anyway.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the show. I think part of it is because I'm from Fort Worth. So I was like, that's cool. Like, yeah, it's right here. A lot of B-rolls, like shots. And then you think you and your wife are eating at Joe T's in one of the scenes.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, that's cool. So I enjoyed it. I thought it was really interesting.
Yeah.
I didn't watch it actually until later on. I think I found out about you. Like in 2016, I didn't know you existed.
Mm-hmm.
I watched it later on. Amazon Prime.
Yeah, it's weird. You know what's weird is that I was shown Jackson an article in Wall Street Journal this week that was talking about TV and was talking about, you know, streaming TV and just kind of where the eyeballs are. Majority of eyeballs are on YouTube and, you know, more so than TV. TV has its place and has its thing, but you know, in 10 years, I don't think
we'll
even think about TV. And I mean, most of my kids don't even own a TV. You know, my daughter, my other two daughters don't. So,
yeah, my kids don't know what.
I do. I'm one third.
My kids don't know what traditional TV is.
Yeah.
Like changing the channel from HDTV. They know, like, when we go to the Max app, there's a HDTV, like, sub app, and then a Magnolia Network where she has, Joanna has all her stuff. Like, that's pretty.
Is that where they are now? Is that it's like a part of HBO?
Yeah, no, it's part of Mag.
Yeah, well, no, they on my
DIY app, became Magnolia Network. They renamed it for them.
And who owns DIY?
Well,
Warner Brothers, because that'd be Max.
Well, when I know when I opened up Max, Magnolia is like a little app. You know, you open. So it
sounds
up.
Like it.
Yeah, that's but cool. I don't know all the business dealings.
Yeah, I don't know who owns it ultimately.
Because that's the weird thing that the streamers have run into, that like streamers seem to be like the answer for TV, right? Like everyone was cutting the cable, like you were saying, and Netflix was a thing, and that was really coming on the rise. And it seemed like, okay, we're just going to get like our own streaming service like Netflix. And then we had the influx of all the streaming services. Mm-hmm. And then now it's getting to a point where it's like, like not everyone wants 15 subscriptions ad free, you know, and we're essentially like getting TV again, but just with it, like,
you're right.
A minimum subscription, so you watch ads, you know, and it's like, well, why am I doing it here? Why can't someone bundle all this and turn it into that? And so we're in a weird phase right now.
It is a weird phase.
But YouTube seems to be the thing that is outside of all that, where it's like, it is paying the most. There's the most amount of content creators that are on the app putting things out there. Even the craziest thing to me is I watch this TV show that airs in England. It's called Taskmaster. It's a hilarious show. They now put every one of their episodes on YouTube in full a day after it releases. And so it's like, they must be getting money from that, and it's not. I don't think they're renegotiating a deal with YouTube. I just think it's
The only thing that I question is, you know, them changing all the monetary payout. I mean, you used to be able to make a good living, and you can't anymore because they you know, one day decided they were going to switch their deal, and so that's the piece to me that makes it unsettling. And makes you want to go, do I really want to commit to this?
That's a big thing I've kind of kicked around in my mind is like, well, I know like I haven't put in as much work as I could on YouTube to kind of bring that back up to where it used to be for me financially. But there was something that changed when they did the shorts, when they were really promoting the shorts. Everyone saw a big like drop off a cliff.
Mm-hmm.
And then you notice, I don't know, if you guys kind of like look at the trending page, I do from time to time, or you just hear about like on podcast, how many big YouTubers have quit in the last year is insane.
Really?
Yeah.
It's wild.
Like huge YouTubers, like Tom Scott, that guy quit.
Why did he quit?
Burnout is his main reason.
What he said. He made a video of like, why I'm quitting YouTube, and he scheduled it.
And it was a really cool video.
It was a good video.
But there's all kinds
Matt
of
Pat quit.
Yeah.
There's a lot of guys.
Filmer people who quit, like people who teach you about gear. Like a lot of them have just quit.
If you look at, I mean,
but are they? Is it all burnout, or is it just not worth it monetarily?
I think it's both. Yeah,
I think a lot of these guys were young guys when they started their channels and started like their stuff, and now they are older with families and everything else, and they're like, "Look, I just can't keep doing the rate that I was doing, and I love doing it, but if I keep doing it at the rate that I'm doing it, it's just not healthy, basically."
And I feel like I could say I was going through a burnout a lot like 2 years ago with mm-hmm. YouTube, trying mm-hmm. to put a video a week and do as much. And I was honestly could say I didn't ever really do filler content, mm-hmm. like very seldom.
Yeah,
I always tried to do something that I thought was actually really cool and valuable, which is hard to do every week. Mm-hmm. But I'm okay burning the candle at both ends if they're going to pay for it. But if it's like, I got $200 for this video.
Right.
Like, I could go in the real world and like
make way
do
more.
Better. You know, mm-hmm. like what am I doing? But there's also the part of me who's like, I like doing it, mm-hmm. you know, but is it a good use of time?
Right.
But they're not going to pay. What do I do?
Well, I mean, like, you know, I look at it, it's a marketing arm for me. And, it's a marketing expense. And, you know, I like doing it. Obviously, having Austin and Kristen make it much easier than, mm-hmm. like, I don't edit my own videos and stuff like that. And I just show up and they take care of everything. I mean, I get too many calls from people saying, I saw you on YouTube, that for me to step away from it. I just think it's led to too much work for us.
That's awesome. Yeah, it definitely has led to work for us as well. Like, it's crazy. We've had a lot of people from YouTube. And I've actually gotten jobs from all over the country. Not that I've taken them, but I guess inquiries, you know?
Yeah.
Will you come to Florida and do this? It's like, I'm going to have to charge you like $5,000 extra to make it worth it, you know? And they're like,
is it a cost thing? Like, if they paid you right for it, would you go?
I don't know. Probably not.
The problem with those jobs is you pull yourself out of your own market. Mm-hmm. And unless you plan to start traveling a lot, it's not worth it.
Well, I guess that's what I know. There's always the thing where you say, like, you try and exclude yourself by giving them a price, you know, and like, where, like, what price would you put down if a guy's telling you to come to Florida for a job that you know is going to take you a week?
I would probably put down I would probably get
the. And let's say the job just as a base, like, what's an average job cost for you here?
Like $4,000.
Okay. So let's say the job costs $4,000, mm-hmm. but then now what's the plus?
Well, I'd have to just factor in travel. I would itemize it for the guy. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, here's my fuel. Yeah. Here's my stay. I would like to bring my family with me.
Right.
So we're going to have to pay for them to stay.
Right.
I wouldn't try to gouge them or something.
Yeah.
But then try to maybe put an inconvenience
fee
on it.
That's what I was going to say. What the inconvenience fee is. Like, what would $10,000 get you down there for a week?
I don't think I would do that to him. I think
you wouldn't do it to him.
It would be, that's too much. No, I'd probably do like
$1,500
or $2,000 bucks. I wouldn't.
What if there's a mega fan who's just like lives in Canada and is like, I don't care how much it costs.
Well,
just
I don't
want
have
you
a
to
passport,
be...
so I can't go there. Dang. So if he pays for that, then I can go.
Yeah.
Okay. Did that answer your questions?
Yes.
Richard?
Yeah. Well, I know a lot more about it now. Because
yeah.
I thought you were like begging for a show, but they came to you. No, I'm just kidding. Please give me a show.
It's funny how little he begged for this show. Where, you know, I think you worked hard for it and did really well, and I'm not saying that, but what I think it's very funny, like, just what now that you know what goes on in the show, you're just like, ah, oh, man.
Yeah. No,
because when you first came to us, it was like, hey, I might have a show on History Channel. And we were like, what? We're all freaking out. And then the more the process went on, the more it was just like, yeah, I probably wouldn't do that again. Like, he's been approached since about shows, and he's been like, yeah, I really am not excited about it. It's just because it's like, one, he got burned, but then two, like, a lot would have to change, and a lot would have to be in the right setting, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I want to make, like, a fake, like, HGTV show of my stuff.
Yeah.
Like, my name's Richard, and for the past 10 years, I've been doing accent walls. All shapes, all sizes, you know? And
just that would have, be like, a so
stupid
funny.
Plot, you
That's
know?
That's funny.
That would be really funny, man.
Yeah, that would be...
Should
I gotta
show
do
a
it.
Video of, like, you fighting with one of your kids. Like, no, the accent wall has to be blue. And, like, I don't know.
Look at it on Pinterest right here. You show it. That would be so funny.
I saw this on Pinterest.
I could like edit it just like they edited.
Yeah, you really could.
It would be hilarious.
Oh, that'd be awesome. That'd be a really funny video.
I
gotta show
you when we wrap this up. There's a some guy already did that with his History Channel. The video is called POV. You haven't watched History Channel in 10 years.
Oh, that's funny.
And you turn it on, and this is the show you see. We'll look at.
Oh, that's funny. any other fun anecdotes that you want to share from your time on this the History Channel?
No.
Nothing funny.
We're dredging up the past. It's painful.
Your channel's now the History Channel. You know?
I feel like your channel actually does a lot more of what you wanted the History Channel to be. Like you said, 10% of the stuff that you thought was cool is market, you know? So, all right. Well, thanks for watching this episode, and we'll see you in the next one.